Welcome to the Minivate Gang Podcast, episode 264. I'm Steve Borsch, and I'm on with Phil Wilson, who hates my music.
It's not the right music. It's not the right music. Beats by Dre get sold to Apple for $3.2 billion. We got to have some hip-hop up in this bitch.
And, of course, Tim Elliott.
Who stole my hairspray?
What?
From the 80s.
The music
is definitely 1980s.
Very 1980s.
I've got like a Flock of Seagulls style hair.
There we go. Well,
you ran so far away.
I actually stole this from
Phil,
Graham.
And Phil, I think at that time he had like this Levon Helm full beard action going on.
Yes, he did. Yeah, it was good. Levon Helm. That was great. In the 80s, I was wearing a Levon Helm.
Did you wear like the Indian, you know, jacket, the leather jacket with all the stuff hanging off of it?
No, I did not. I'm sorry.
I did go through a
Nehru shirt phase. So
we should record right now. We should just go listen to some Devo.
Devo. That's 70s, by the way. That's not 80s.
Yeah, that's true. But it became popular in the 80s because it was the only thing MTV could find.
You guys are so much better at music than I am.
Yeah. I remember playing that in my dorm freshman year in 1978.
Really?
People thought I was nuts.
You were.
Yeah.
Yep. That was.
All right.
Well, listen, you know, there's been lots going on. We'll talk about the, you want to talk about the Apple Beats by Dre?
No. Right now?
We'll get to that.
Big local news. Yeah, news flash.
Okay, retail boy. What's the big news flash?
I just want to say, I called this months ago. You can go back and check the tape.
I believe we all said to you, really?
But it's true. Greg Steinhoffel, CEO of Target, is out.
Yes. Well, and it's not just the data breach. That was kind of frosting on the cake.
Yeah. Did you see that piece in MinPost? Wow. That was
brutal. Yeah.
It was brutal.
Well, actually, I came across it because Ed Kohler had tweeted it. Mm-hmm. Gloves were off.
Oh, they pulled no punches. Yeah, the whole concept of, you know, what was going on behind the big red wall, and it's just wow.
Yeah. Well, so it'll be interesting to see who replaces him, because you know JCPenney still doesn't have a CEO, and
I thought you were going to say JCPenney was going to replace him.
No.
Yeah, they'll bring Ron Johnson back.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it works so well at JCPenney. The board's going to be, you know, Johnson's looking for redemption. Come on.
Yeah, second chance.
Right? Yeah,
absolutely.
No, I don't think he's going to come back.
Well, it'll be interesting.
I think he's
going to
write a
happens.
Book, and he's going to
doesn't have a great track record of retail success after Apple.
Yeah.
Well, doesn't need to either.
I suppose.
Yeah, they'll get somebody else. Rumor has it they're looking outside of Target, which is probably good. Mm-hmm. But obviously, to be someone with lots of retail experience, which may not be good.
Maybe they'll find out another friendly-looking guy like that, their security guy that they brought in, their tech guy.
No, seriously, I think they need to look at someone either that's in a kind of disruptive online space, or they need to get someone that's like senior at Walmart.
What about Hubert Joly? Will he cross the street?
No.
He's not the right guy.
Okay.
I think that, you know, they really need to change their business model. Washington Post piece I put in the notes.
Yes, about what was going on. Yeah.
Yeah, their business model is a real problem, and they really need to like take a hard look at that. Obviously, online is a big piece of what they need to do, but their whole Ron Johnson era, just a better Walmart experience is not going to cut it these days.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Well, so they need someone that knows how to innovate on the logistics side. So someone from Walmart or someone from Costco, something like that would probably be.
Yeah, but I don't think there's a need for a radical change at Target. I mean, from my lofty perch as a Target customer, I'm fairly still satisfied with the my credit card's not secure, but beyond
that,
that
one
shopping
yesterday, they have the new one. They have the new Verifone. Yeah.
Yeah,
they had them at the Apple Valley store.
You know what the thing is, though, Phil, is the goal has always been to get you in the store.
Sure.
Because once you're in the store, then you're going to follow the racetrack around the store, and you're going to buy a bunch of stuff because you're going to remember, oh, geez, I need that extension cord. Oh, yeah, that's right. I was going to buy a bathroom scale, whatever. And all of a sudden, you went in for a bottle of shampoo and $300 later you walk out the door. And so getting people in is the big thing, but what if they don't come in? And,
I think they will keep coming in. I don't believe that there's a radical shift to I'm only going to sit on my ass and buy stuff online. I don't think that's the way.
So. No, but for certain product categories, yes, but not consumables. Completely. For example,
I don't think you're going to sit there and buy your Aveeno moisturizer online. You're going to go to Target, and when you go to Target, you're just I need a new Pez, or I need, how about those batteries? I think it's still going to continue. But
look at the whole electronics category, though. I mean, your TVs and cameras and iPads and all that stuff. Maybe you'd go in for accessories, but why would you buy all that other stuff in there when you can buy it for less or buy bundles and so on online?
So are you buying all of your accessory stuff online now, guys?
Pretty much.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd say 95% of it.
Unless it's at the clearance, clearance selection at Target, sometimes you find deals there on accessories.
Yeah, like orange cases, plates and
cases and stuff. No, I'm serious. Like iPad cases and various other things. They have pretty good clearance deals usually.
Well, have you gone in for something like basically to look at the clearance, Tim, and then walked out with something that you really hadn't planned on picking up anyway?
No, if I'm in the store for, buying food or something, I might motor over to clearance to see what they've got, just to check it out. And sometimes, I picked up a Bluetooth speaker one time for $15.
Well, thanks again for the heads up on Mono Price, because I buy a lot of stuff, cables and everything else from them. Yep. But the one thing I wanted to mention was in that Washington Post article, the thing that really, really hit me was about halfway down in the article, that buying habits are changing. The buzzword now is omnichannel, meaning that customers want to buy things wherever it's most convenient for them, whether it's in a store or collecting it in a store, something they bought online, or ordering home delivery from a store, or ordering something shipped to a locker at 7-Eleven. Ooh, I wouldn't do that. But
Amazon. Yeah. Amazon has lockers at 7-Eleven.
Yeah. But what was interesting was I have to be honest, I was not steeped in the buzzword du jour in retail, which is omnichannel, until I went to that SPS Commerce event on Monday. Well, it was so good that I wrote a huge article about it here on Minovate.
And misspelled Jamie Thingelstad's name.
Yes.
I saw that tweet. It's like, oh, man.
Yeah. Well,
what are you going
to
do?
Well, it's funny because he tweeted that to me as a DM. As he said, the fifth paragraph down, you misspelled my name. And it's like, oh, man. But luckily, I was able to change both, including the one at the end, before you saw the second one. But at any rate, what was interesting about it was the fact that really gaining a new appreciation for what smaller retailers are dealing with respect to not only being able to be at the point of potential purchase from a consumer standpoint, but also the fact that retailers have to step up their item assortment so that they have more things available for people to buy. And we've talked about that a lot, about how everybody hits kind of the 80% and you want a new microphone and they only carry the two hottest sellers instead of the five.
So this concept of omnichannel, Steve, is this sort of the retail space or retail version of long tail? Is that what we're talking about? Providing more of the, more inventory, a more diverse inventory?
No, it's providing consumers with the ability to buy whatever they want, when they want, however they want it. So it could be online, pick up in store, or it can be in the store, or it can be checking it out online and going into the store. I mean, there's a lot of permutations of that. And what you want to do is you want to make that as frictionless as possible. And the problem is that most retailers have silos around their online presence and their store inventory and everything else. And so it's very difficult for them to do things like sell online and then return in a store.
Right.
And that is what a customer wants. So if I buy something on the Best Buy website, and then I decide after it arrives, I really don't want this, and I want to take it down into the my local store, I want to be able to return that. And that's the thing that people have to really you know, work on.
So, Steve, when you were at this event, I mean, obviously we know Jamie fairly well, but was there, were you able to visit with some other folks there that
yeah,
you may not have met before? Or?
Well, I talked to all the exhibitors, and then most of the attendees were frankly from out of state. I didn't see anybody else that I knew there except Jamie. And but I had an opportunity to talk to the woman that heads up PR for them, and a couple of the marketing folks, and various people in tech and customer support and so forth. And you know, SPS is still a small company, and their stock spiked quite a bit here this past year. And it's come down a little bit like most tech stocks, but they seem to be in a pretty good position with what they've lined up. And you know, I'm not going to go on and on about it because of the, you can read the article, but there's a great graphic from a report I found from Deloitte's Global Powers of Retailing 2014. And it shows all of the things that retailers have to deal with. You start to look at that. So not only awareness, but letting people select and, you know, an overall shopping experience, and then how to be at the point of sale, and then how to provide service after the fact. And you look at all this stuff and you're like, oh my God, I'm glad I'm not in retail.
It's a tough business right now. Yeah. So how much did Beacons come up in the discussion?
I did not attend one session where I figured it would probably come up, because I was in a different one. Oh. And so I'm assuming that it was discussed. But what was interesting to me was that there wasn't a lot of discussion or anything that was articulated in any of the tracks about the growing groundswell of concern about privacy. And so there really wasn't a lot of discussion about that, or security, frankly.
Well, I think, you know, I think that they're in this the situation of getting past the you know, that tipping point of being able to deliver, you know, the goods when and where, and they're not ready to tackle the privacy issue yet. I mean, it obviously is part of every discussion at some point, but I don't think it's the main focus of discussion. Tim, just speaking briefly about Beacons, I've been to a couple of things in the last week where we've addressed iBeacons. It was at the Cocoa Heads group at Thomson Reuters on Thursday, and there was a wonderful presentation by it was Jose Hernandez about iBeacons. And it's amazing to see iBeacons in use in action from a technical standpoint. It's by no means a perfect technology yet. It does have its issues and its flaws. Have you ever seen the signal of a Bluetooth a beacon, what it does? And how easily it's impacted?
I don't think I have a phone that has beacon, you know, like that Bluetooth low energy capability. Maybe I do, and I just
you can grab a beacon detector for your Android device from the Google Play Store, and you can see that. And it's just amazing to watch when you watch the distance from the beacon and how it changes. You can have one beacon that may be 10 feet away, and it will change from 2 feet to 15 feet. Away just quickly. I mean, it's constantly changing. So, you know, we've definitely included beacon technology in some of the proposals that we've put out for clients at HyperIQ. But I, you know, we also have to put out that warning that, you know, this is not perfect technology. If you're looking to triangulate position with beacons, not going to work. It's not going
to
work.
You
have to have a lot of them, but because they change so often, you're never going to get a pinpoint position. You may be able to say they're in this half of a hall or this half of a hall, but you're not going to be able to say they're in, you know,
they're 3 feet, you know, within from 2 or 3 feet. A store. Okay.
That's not there yet. Not with the Bluetooth low energy, but as anybody will tell you, that the technology changes, you know, with every new updated version of either the device that's reading the beacon or the beacon itself.
So, well, did this come up at that Midwest Mobile Summit that you and Graham went to?
Yeah, we were up in Fargo for the summit, and there was a presentation on iBeacons. Kurt McIntyre from Vector Digital, which is he presented the same thing at Mobile March for us, and has refined his presentation. That was also talked about. It's always an interesting, the Fargo trip is always interesting. And I like the event that Myriad Mobile puts on, there in Fargo from a content standpoint. It's nice. But what I really enjoy about it is seeing another community other than, the Twin Cities or any other communities that we may have visited for, you know, in the technology space, to see how they really do showcase what's happening in Fargo and the local community, the tech community in Fargo. And it was very exciting to see what some of the stuff they're doing there is, and just their whole pride in community at Fargo.
Well, you know, I was curious about something, and I didn't really study the site or anything, but, you know, because the Red River Valley is the best growing soil in the universe. And I'm wondering about agricultural apps and what's happening with, you know, things going on in the field with GPS and phones, or is that other technology? Is it really not mobile?
No, that technology was showcased, especially last year. There were a few folks from the agricultural industry and the heavy equipment industry as well. Like, I believe CAT was part of it last year, because they had developed some apps. But this year, no, I don't think there was anything agriculturally focused this year. It was a little bit broader in topic. There was a lot of talk about startup mentalities and that sort of a thing. A good event. I don't know if the event needs to last 2 days. I think the 2 day concept is more about showcasing Fargo and the Fargo community. It gives the people a chance to, well, first bring people in and have them pay for hotel rooms, but also that does allow you to go out on an evening and see what's going on in Fargo. I don't think that content could easily be put in 1 day, but I think they choose to spread it out over 2 to make it a little more relaxed and a little more, community oriented.
So what'd you think of the Fargo Theater? My uncle, who's in his 80s, that was his first job, was as an usher at the Fargo Theater. And then when it got redone, and I haven't been to it since it's, you know, I went there when I was a kid. Mm-hmm. Is it pretty nice?
Yeah, it's a nice little theater. Yeah, it's a great little venue. It's very classic in its styling, and you know they always start the conference and warm up the conference with the organ that rises out of the orchestra pit, and so that's always a lot of fun. So yeah, it was a good event, and the gang over at Myriad Mobile did another stellar job of putting it together.
That's great.
And I know Graham was there because there was booze. So
Oh, you didn't see him probably though, huh?
No, I saw him
hanging around by the bar.
Of course he was there. Okay. Of course we did. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Worth a trip, I think. So
cool.
Must have been good, 'cause he's still sleeping it off.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Well, no, he's up, you know, he's up north with his wife. So
yeah. Yeah,
exactly. He's on the craft fair circuit now.
It's craft fair time.
That's right. Yep. That's right. Well, Magna 360 has grown.
Man, that's a story, isn't it? They're just growing like leaps and bounds. Yeah, and now they're gobbling up other companies.
Well, you know, when Reside and Magna 360 got together, that was a big deal, because Reside was really looked upon as the up and coming Salesforce.com centric development organization, and they really knew it inside out, backwards and forwards, and knew Salesforce, S-Force, the API set, and what was going on with apps and so on and so forth. And they can apparently just customize the heck out of Salesforce. And so this is a really good move. Because I especially like the thing, you know, America, you know, part of America's most promising companies. Sounds like they're on a roll.
Mm-hmm. I think so.
Yep. Yeah.
Cracked 100 employees.
Absolutely. And then SmartThings is growing.
It was interesting to, you know, hire somebody from formerly of the Google Glass team, who was in charge of business relationships, I believe, for Google Glass.
Yeah.
She worked at YouTube as well.
Yeah.
Well, and being in business development means, you know, you can go out and forge alliances and partnerships and evangelize the technology and all of that.
Which I think is a kind of another signal that Google Glass isn't necessarily, you know, going and gangbusters and leaps and bounds.
Well, it's maybe not a big a deal.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I think it's a R&D project, and I don't think it's ever going to be more than that. But what's interesting is they're learning what sort of notifications and what sort of applications work in that kind of that sort of way. And I think that's going to inform what they do with their wristwatch program. So when that, when they're...
You're talking Android, Google now.
Yeah, when Android watches come out, I mean, well, they've already shown some stuff. It's going to be like Google Now notifications and some of the other stuff that you see from Field Trip, which is an app that apparently runs really great on Google Glass as well as on your smartphone. But stuff like that are the kind of notifications and the kind of location-centric stuff that, that you'll want, tours, whatever, right, events nearby. All that kind of stuff is perfect for a wearable. So, you know, I think they're learning a lot of that that will pay off in another product, not Google Glass, because it's just way too geeky.
Yeah.
Plus, there's all those privacy concerns.
Well,
And I don't necessarily want to, you know, wear a camera strap to my glasses all the time.
Yeah, you know? Why not? That would be a good look for you, Tim.
Yeah, right. No, I don't know.
You don't know. Okay, all right.
I don't know.
I'm not
going to get Google Glass.
Yeah, I just wanted to mention one thing about SmartThings, which is I found out that they have a status page now, because when you know, one of the big benefits to going with SmartThings was not having to go around after daylight savings time or as the days grew longer to go around to all my digital timers and reset each one. But once they were reset, they just worked. And so it's because SmartThings uses a hub that talks to the SmartThings server, if there's an issue at the server level, nothing works in your house.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah. And so it happened to me last night. And so here it was, you know, I'm back here at 5:30-ish and nothing works. You know, it's not turning on.
So you've got other kinds of things like a Wemo Lite that has its own like control interface.
I've got all kinds of devices. I've got lamp modules. I've got motion detectors. I've got the motion sensors on my garage door. So if it's left open for more than 5 minutes, I get a text message. I've got a sensor for my sump pump. So if that floods, it'll send me a text message.
Saying that if you pair those with your SmartThings hub, that the other control interface that shipped with that manufacturer's gear doesn't work anymore?
No, that'll still work, but I don't use anything else because everything I use is connected to SmartThings. Anyway, the punchline is I had to get on, you know, send an email to support and everything else. And it really made me stop and think about the potential risk, especially if you put this into a senior citizen's home or if it's a health-related SmartThings situation, you know, that A, they could be in liability if the stuff just doesn't work, or B, it's just a pain in the butt so people don't bother to buy. And it's my understanding that they're working toward a model where if your hub is offline for some period of time, you know, 3 minutes or something or 5 minutes, that everything is held locally in the hub. And so then everything will still work until the thing handshakes again, which is good, which I think is where it has to be. So I think that's the, you know, when I think about this woman starting with in biz dev, it's great to be able to hook everything up and connect appliances and sound systems and light bulbs and door locks and all that stuff. But boy, if you're outside and you're walking up to your house and you don't have a key and you can't get in, well, of course you could still punch the code in, but you know, if you had one of the other kinds of locks that didn't have a key or a code on it and you can't get in your house because your hub's out, that's a problem.
Don't those digital door locks, don't they have like a traditional key too?
They do. Most of them do.
Like a metal key, like you stick in and you turn it.
There's one that doesn't. It doesn't have any kind of a key or a punch code you can put in. But most of the ones, you know, like from Schlage and who's the other big one? There's another big one. They have traditional ways of getting in. So if you have a key or you can punch the code in, you're fine.
Okay.
Yeah. So that's good.
So you're pranking Julio again?
Did you love it?
I gotta wonder. I just always wonder when Steve sleeps, because he always seems to have time to put together videos and Photoshop and
well, okay.
Honest to God, Steve, do you ever sleep?
I do sleep, but I'm always reading, my news feeds, and I'm always goofing around with new technology, always. But not to the extent that Julio does. And he is more plugged in than anybody I know.
The footage looks like Julio back in like 1975.
Well, okay. So here's how it went down. So he posts this, Hipstamatic unveils a video app article. And first of all, I did not know that Hipstamatic was done in St. Paul.
Yeah. Then they moved to San Francisco.
Right. But I had no idea So then they come out with this app called Sin-O-Matic, and I read a review on it and I thought, okay, that's pretty awesome. And I bought it. It was a couple bucks. And then when I saw the other filters, I bought several of the other filters. And, then when I saw his link, I went on and looked for some videos of Julio, and I just shot it off my laptop and then put the filter on it. I'll put a link in the show notes to the video.
But he updated his post on Pioneer Press with your video.
Oh, yeah, really?
You didn't see that?
No, I didn't see that.
And your tweet with your face from your mugshot.
Oh, how funny. Oh, yeah, I see.
Got the Steve mugshot there on Twitter.
Okay. Oh, how funny. That's great.
That's right.
Yeah,
you're just hanging with the hip kids. That's all there is to it.
Yeah, I'm a hipster. Yeah,
that's you are a hipster. Yeah. You're a hep cat.
I got to tell you, it's a problem though when I stop at red lights because of the babes when they pull up next to me and they're just, you know, they're like, man, this guy with the gray hair over here, he's really hot. At least that's what I think in my own mind.
He's very fly.
Yeah, right.
Okay.
Right.
Okay. He's a metro kind of guy.
But, you know, speaking of Julio and his some of the stuff that he's been talking about, you know, he's in Star Trek. He's in Trekkie heaven right now. He did a piece on the whole Mall of America Star Trek.
And then the Mall of America.
Oh yeah. He's in geek heaven right now.
Yeah.
The Mall of America Star Trek exhibit.
I hope there's some discount coupon. $16.99 is kind of heavy.
Yeah. It is kind of pricey, isn't it?
I know. Yeah.
But also I thought Paul Allen owned the Captain Kirk's command chair.
Maybe he does. Maybe he's.
This could be a replica. You know,
it says it's the original one.
It's the original
chair. Maybe he's lending it out to this touring exhibition.
That could be.
You know, Paul probably needs a little spending money, so he's probably renting it out.
Yeah.
He's probably just getting by these days.
Well, you know, first of all, I show this to my wife, and she goes, "Well, that's kind of interesting." You know, so she's not going. With me.
I think we should all go.
That's kind of interesting.
No, let's do this. Let's do the podcast from the bridge of the Enterprise.
That would be good.
Oh, that would, they'd never let us, but that sure would be awesome.
I bet you they would.
That would be awesome. But you know what? I'm going to look and see if I can find this link, but there was a guy in the UK who completely remade his apartment to look like the Star Trek Next Generation set. And so,
never mind what I said about Steve having too much time.
But listen,
here's a guy with too much time.
Yeah, here's a guy with too much time. But my favorite part of this whole thing was that after he completed it, his girlfriend moved out. She didn't like it.
Why?
yeah, exactly. Yeah, I'm not going to marry this guy if he's going to invest all his money in a Star Trek apartment. Oh my God. Yeah, I know.
I think we need to do that. I really do.
Well, you know, when we built our house, I was going to have doors on the house on my office, because I'm in my home office right now. I was going to have doors that had that opaque sort of smoked glass and have it say Steve Borsch, private detective, and have my entire office set up like something out of a Mickey Spillane novel. And then I thought, yeah, but I'm going to have printers and computers and everything else in there. That's not going to work. And so I decided not to do it, but oh well.
You need to tell the kids at home who Mickey Spillane is.
Yeah, exactly. He was a detective writer.
Private eye. A gumshoe.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. So let's talk
The big stories of the week.
The big stories of the week that, you know, around, and I think, I'm sorry, one of the biggest stories is the whole Beats by Dre thing, because it's so amazing. $3.2 billion for Apple to buy, is going to buy Beats by Dre.
Do you really think that's going to happen?
Of course I think it's happening.
Really? Oh my God.
That's change that falls out on the floor of the car for those guys. So,
well, it is, but I'll tell you what.
What are they really getting though?
Well, what they're getting is they're getting the hippest headphones on the market. Plus they're getting an up and coming, Beats Radio, Beats Audio, channel, you know, sort of a Pandora play. So they're not necessarily doing the greatest with, iTunes Radio. And I think that this is an opportunity for them to grow in two ways and, you know, to associate themselves with a very hip headphone that the kids are into. And it also allows them to get an existing audience that they may not necessarily be serving.
See, what's funny is my daughter hates, the whole Beats thing. She goes, you know, the headphones break. They're really expensive.
They're not really that good sounding either.
Yeah. And she says,
really aren't.
She says, I don't know why in the world Apple would want to associate with that brand.
Well, did you see that they sell $200 headphones that cost them $14 to make?
Yeah. Yep. Yeah.
That's crazy margin.
Yeah.
But I think they've got a bigger plan here. If they actually do this, there's got to be something else besides the headphone brand, which, you know, I guess could fit because they're both premium and cool and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
And the streaming thing, yeah, I get you on that one. But if Apple wanted to do streaming, they could do it without these guys. So I think that there's something else. And the only thing I can think of is high-definition audio. So maybe they're going to come out with a super iPod Touch that plays like this Pono music that Neil Young's been working on.
Yeah, but see, I don't think you associate yourself with the Dre's, because Dre's are never, you know, they're not known for their really great sound.
Oh, really? Okay.
No, Pono is known, obviously, for really great sound, but no, I don't think you can read, you're not going to read a lot of reviews about Beats, the Beats headphones that are like, oh, stellar, this thing is so cool, or this is the best audio I've ever heard. No, it was all about marketing success and tying into the hip-hop culture.
What you're saying is that they're the modern-day equivalent of the Bose speakers.
Yeah, I think so. I think that's very easy to say. Hmm. Yeah, that's a very good comparison. I obviously only those of us of a certain age and you know, audiophiles know what Bose meant at one time, but yeah. You know, because Bose didn't just mean, you know, wave radios on late night TV. Bose was like,
but I listened to my Rush Limbaugh on my wave radio. Come on.
Please.
Just kidding.
I know you are.
I don't listen to Rush.
But I do have a wave radio.
But he sells a crap load of those wave radios, I'm sure. Yeah.
I'm sure he does.
Well, we have a wave radio that was my dad's. And so nobody else wanted it. And I said, well, I'll take it. And we stuck it in the kitchen thinking that we wouldn't listen to it very often. And
so you're hooked.
Well, the first thing in the morning, we come down, push the button, and we got NPR on. And just listen to the NPR news and so forth. It's great. And
all things considered, never sounded so good, right?
It does. It sounds well. I mean, if wonderful. You
had, and again, Steve, very basic. And I, you know, back in the day, Steve and I were actually in the hi-fi industry, so I mean, we remember. You know, I don't know if you remember, Steve, but we always sold against Bose, because Bose was more of a, you know, at that time, Team Electronics, you know, the radio, world radio sort of speaker that everybody thought they were the coolest thing ever, when in actuality they were just, you know, they were an efficient use of a speaker in a small box. So you think about Bose and going into the radio space, it's a perfect fit for that whole technology that they were using. So
well, yep. I gotta tell you, I at one point repped, this goes back into the mid 80s, I repped Pioneer Electronics as a manufacturer's rep, worked for a firm here, and
I sold a lot of your HPM 40 speakers, by the way.
There you go. Thank you. Yep. But Pioneer came out with that Elite series. You know, they had an Elite Laserdisc player and all kinds of really, really high end components. And I remember going into a local audio store here that run by a blind guy in Richfield. And, this guy sold speakers that at that point in the 80s were like $10,000 a pair.
Oh, magnaplaners.
Oh my.
But I bet they sounded good.
Well, here's the thing. He put a record on, you know, he was pissing and moaning about CDs and how crappy quality they were and so on. And he puts this vinyl record on and starts to play it through these speakers. And then he plays it through a pair of the Pioneer Elite speakers. And I looked at him and I said, you know, I don't think my ears are trained, but I really can't hear that much difference. So $1,000 for the Elite speakers or $10,000 for these, you know, whatever brand it was. And I frankly couldn't hear the difference. And the problem is now with MP3s, we've taught a whole generation
to listen to crappy sound.
Yeah, seriously.
Yes. It's true. Yeah, it's true.
Because I'll sometimes put on these, I'm wearing Sennheiser studio headphones right now, $500 headphones that I got for a lot less. But I'll put on these and I'll plug, or I'll have my daughter put them on and plug it into her iPhone. And she's listening to her 192 kilobit per second AAC music. And she goes, oh my God, does that sound good? I said, well, yeah. I mean, you're listening to it through little earbud headphones that aren't very nice.
Yeah.
And it's surprising how people, you know, once they hear what sound can be, they get pretty excited about it. So maybe Apple will do that with Beats. Maybe that is the HD audio is the hidden secret sauce here. That
I think it's got to be.
Really?
Well, okay. Maybe so. Okay. Maybe so.
Because they're way overpaying for this, you know, I don't know, for this brand. I mean, obviously they're paying for the brand as well. And they probably sell a fair amount of them in the Apple stores because they've been carrying them for some time now. So, you know.
Yeah.
Well, we will see. I mean, they've got to do something, right? They can't just sit on their pile of money forever.
Right.
I guess right. They could, though. They could just do that.
Steve, do you want to talk a little bit about throttling bandwidth and internet speeds?
This is all part of... Yeah, okay, you guys. No, but seriously, it all depends on how you, if you want to keep the internet open or not. But
I agree.
So Level 3 comes out with this this whole paper about what's happening with the backbones, because they run a backbone, and all the peering connections and everything else. And basically, they are being pretty clear about the fact that the major ISPs are deliberately throttling traffic that's coming in, especially with ones like Netflix and other major users of bandwidth. And this is all part of that whole net neutrality debate. And I don't want to get into it again because it's just there's too much going on with it. But I'll put a couple of links in the show notes to this Verge article, but also that 50 leading tech investors tell the FCC a pay-to-play internet would kill startups. I honestly believe that, because in order to scale, if anybody wants to scale and they have to pay a peering fee to ISPs in order to be able to scale and have performance that's on par with anyone else, they're not going to be able to do it unless the investors cough up the money for those peering arrangements, and it's not going to be cheap. And so it's going to be interesting to see how this battle plays out, but it's way above our pay grade, I'll tell you.
Well, this is not throttling. This is just the way that backbone providers do business. So that's the thing that the people at The Verge, with all due respect to those writers, they just don't understand it. And that this is goes on all the time. And this is just the amount of traffic running through their routing equipment. And the more that you run in one direction, the more you have to pay for that. That's just the way it is.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the way it has been. You know, I was in this business back 15 years ago. And that was the way that business was done 15 years ago.
Yeah.
And the big disruptor is that Netflix has built their business model based upon this unlimited internet bandwidth, and they're reaching the edge of what they can get, and so now they're going to have to pay more for it. So their whole business model has to change. And I just got a note from them, and you probably did too if you're a subscriber, that they're going to raise our rates starting next month $1 a month to $8.99 now. I'm surprised they didn't go.
I'm outraged.
Well, I mean, a dollar? I mean, come on.
I'm
make
teasing.
Make it worth your while. Make it $9.99, please.
Yeah. You know? Yeah, yeah.
Because I at least get that. I'd probably pay $15 or $20 a month for it.
Shh, quiet.
You know what I mean?
You would pay that for Netflix?
For Netflix, yeah, because
I get so much out of
there's
it.
There's a lot of good stuff. What's interesting is that, you know, originally I got Netflix for the movies and the original shows, you know, House of Cards and so forth. And I almost never watch movies on Netflix. Maybe there's a couple here and there. It's all TV shows. And they're, you know, like older TV shows, and you just like go through them. And so that, you know, to me, that's worth it.
Well, you know what I love is the fact that they have tons of documentaries on on Netflix. And every once in a while, I'll get into a documentary mood. And, you know, like there was one winter day, my wife was out of town for the whole weekend traveling overseas. And here I was, and I thought, okay, I don't want to do anything. I just want to watch something. So sit back and just enjoy. And so I popped on Guns, Germs, and Steel in National Geographic, you know, about the Pulitzer Prize winning book. And then I thought, well, that was pretty good. And I watched another one. I would probably watch four of them that afternoon. And there were probably 15 more that I could have watched that were just fascinating documentaries. And the stuff's just there, and it's all free. And you think, man, for $8?
So let's pay, $8 or $9 a month.
No.
So let's just recap a little bit here for you kids listening at home. Steve starts his day with NPR.
On his Bose.
On his Bose Wave Radio. He spends time in his office photoshopping and playing with technology. Yeah.
Hipstamatic.
Ends his day with a round of documentary viewing. You really want to party with this guy, don't you?
Right. And when he's not, during the day, he's tooling around on that sexy Prius.
Oh my God. Okay, go ahead.
We give Steve a very hard time. I admit that I give Steve a hard time, but I really love the man. The man is a genius and brilliant and a great guy to hang out with. But you know, on first impression, you think to yourself, huh?
Well, and it's funny because just about all of my college buddies are dyed-in-the-wool conservative Republicans for the most part. And you know, not all of them, but the lion's share of them. And if you think you're giving me crap, you haven't seen anything until you see me at Madden's, you know, playing golf. So it's just crazy. But anyway, so who put in the, I think I put this in about the Russia quietly tightens reins on the web with bloggers law.
I can't imagine anybody else.
I actually put that in.
I couldn't remember. I read it.
I thought it was an interesting story, and especially it, you know, affects us as bloggers.
Are you shocked? Are you?
Well, this is a chilling kind of thing. I'm not shocked that Russia, you know, it's a totalitarian sort of a dictatorship kind of deal that's masquerading as a democracy. Mm-hmm. And now they're making bloggers register. But this is obviously an extreme kind of thing to try to stifle free speech on the internet.
Yeah.
But I can see in the not too distant future, someone, you know, maybe even Obama, doing the same thing here in the U.S., which would put a chilling effect on blogging.
I don't think so.
Really? Okay. I think we're a step away from this sort of thing. So I just put it in there because, you know, this is obviously a way for Putin to try to continue to crack down on free speech in Russia.
Did you want to take a time out, Tim, and go bury some ammo in the backyard or anything?
No. I am in the middle of digging my survival shelter down there. And I'll soon be stocking it with canned goods. And
your little hidey hole?
And, you know, some batteries and... You know, some of the other things. I'm just saying that this is an important story that really hasn't been covered a lot. So I think it's an important story from the fact that,
I mean, if you look at what's happening with Russia and the Ukraine, I become more and more convinced it's an effort to, I don't know if it's a, it's sort of a combination of a power grab and restoring national pride, you know, in Russia amongst Russians. I don't know, because it's easy. I don't know enough about world politics, so I should probably shut up, but I also think that it's just a concerted effort to restore Russia to this national power or this international power again. And I think that You know, anytime that you can control exactly what information is being put out makes that job a lot easier.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
See,
I know that much.
One thing I wanted to put in, I just stuck it in the show notes. We forgot to talk about it in Minnesota stories, but that the Minnesota House advances the smartphone kill switch bill. So if your phone gets stolen, you can remotely kill the device and brick it. So it can't be used by anybody else.
But, correct me if I'm wrong, but isn't this an iOS 7 feature?
It is an iOS 7 feature, but also the thing is that this all sounds great, but you can take that phone and send it overseas, and then it doesn't matter because the kill switch isn't going to work if you're not using a U.S. mobile company. So,
oh, really? So I can't kill. So let's say that I lose my iPhone. I can't go on my computer to iCloud and find my iPhone and just kill it from there.
You can remotely erase it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. But you can't disable the device itself. I don't believe. So if I'm wrong, let us know in the comments, after we post the show, if you know of anything, but, I don't believe that you can physically brick the phone so that even if it went over to, you know, China or something, that somebody couldn't buy the phone and stick it on a Chinese cell phone system. Mm.
Yeah, this whole kill switch thing is troubling.
It is troubling.
Because you either get pissed off at your wife and kill her phone, you know, that's not good.
Well, not
it's
only
not
that.
Gonna, it's yeah. not going to be good for marriages.
No.
Got to say that.
No. Well, we're coming up here, kids, on the close on the end, but I just wanted to mention that John Hamm's Don Draper wax statue was unveiled at New York's Madame Tussauds.
Okay.
I know that was just, it's not the most important story ever. But I just thought it was just sort of weird. You know,
that was a very creepy shot too, that you put in the notes.
Yeah. Which I can't use cause it's a Getty image. So
I
won't show that, but, my son and I went to the Madame Tussauds in London when we were there, and my wife and daughter went, we have less than zero interest in going.
Oh yeah.
And he and I thought it was kind of cool, but you know, the stuff.
Creepy. Cool.
It is kind of creepy. You know, some of the wax figures like George Bush did not look like him, and Tony Blair didn't look like him.
Listen. There was a Washington Post blog about U.S. businesses being destroyed faster than they're being created, which led to this quote that Steve, I'm sure you'll post in the show notes, but the American economy is less entrepreneurial now than at any point in the last three decades.
Yep.
Do you consider that to be the truth?
No, I think this is wrong.
That's what I wanted to talk about.
Yeah, no, I think it's more entrepreneurial because people of our age have to be entrepreneurial or we don't have any way to feed our families.
Bingo. That's exactly what I thought.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Because people aren't hiring people like us.
I think larger businesses are, you know, I think are being, you know, chopped up or impacted. I don't know if they're necessarily being destroyed, but they are being severely negatively impacted. And I think we're just getting into more and more segmentation. I agree. You have to be more entrepreneurial, but I think we also know, especially from the tech and innovation space, that a lot of times, you know, something that we create or that has considered an innovation does lead to the loss of jobs, the loss of a change in the economy.
Well, look, if you're in media, the internet has not been your friend. If you're in
not at all.
TV, radio, magazines, newspapers, it hasn't been a good thing. But
and you can see the impact that we talk about it every week with Best Buy and Target. We see what happens when the online economy kicks in. It does impact negatively the in-store traffic. And, you know, we talk about that endlessly. So, yes, I mean, to think that you're, look, the advent of the car put a lot of blacksmiths out of business. So it just happens that way. And you can't go into building and innovating and not at least consider that.
Well, what about the argument? Because I've read this several times in different articles. What about the argument that because it's, you know, the internet's making the inefficient efficient, that certain businesses that are disrupted by very small teams. So whereas it used to take 200 or 300 people to do this particular task, now it takes a team of 8 who builds a great web app and, you know, a mobile app to go along with it, and essentially puts all those people out of jobs because it's essentially made it so much more efficient. And so not only are businesses in theory being destroyed faster than they're being created, according to the Brookings Institution, but that the ones that the companies that are coming up are employing fewer people. What about that argument?
I think that's absolutely true. It is absolutely true.
Yeah. That's just the way that progress works.
Yeah. Yeah.
You just have to figure out what your niche is and you have to go for it.
Yep.
And maybe your niche is working at Walmart or Target, you know, that may be
a greeter.
Yeah, maybe it is.
Well, it is.
I don't know. It's as hard as it is. Maybe it is.
Yeah.
You know, I've always had this credo that I always feel like any business I'm associated with should really strive to be a great, you know, business. And part of that being a great business is that you're basically packed with a local community or the packed with your workforce, that you're going to provide them a good job. You're going to provide them, you know, good benefits and a great working environment, because ultimately that's going to be good for you because they'll have money to spend and the economy thrives and you grow, blah, blah, blah. So, you know, I think about that sort of thing probably more often than I should, about how does, you know, what this piece will represent, you know, how does that impact so many people that feed the old version of it? How does the impact of building electric cars, you know, affect the auto worker?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and I mean, not I only think, the auto worker, but the dealership who relies on service as a big part of their business model, that service is going to pretty much go away.
The petroleum company that depends on you consuming petroleum products.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a ripple effect that you have to consider, but at the same time, if you consider, you know, staying with the status quo, you will not innovate.
Right.
So,
well,
how about that? That was
on deep, that happy it? Note.
Yeah. Wasn't that deep?
Yeah. I think I'm going to go cry right now.
Any we'll happy cry. Stuff coming up in the events this week?
Well, the Secure 360 conference, the premier educational conference in the upper Midwest for the information risk management and security industry, May 12th through 14th. The only kicker is it's like $500.
Oh, Steve will be driving you there in his Prius listening to all things considered.
That's
right. Yeah. Thank you, Phil.
He's a big Renee Montaigne fan.
Let's see. Big day, May 13th. You may say this Twin Cities Business Emerging Growth Forum is the big thing, but actually it's my wife's birthday. What? That's probably the biggest event. So
I see.
Very happy birthday to the love of my life. So,
yep.
That's probably more important. And don't forget, you kids at home, tomorrow, if you're listening on Saturday, is Mother's Day. Do not forget Mother's
Day.
Holy
crap, it is.
Because if mama ain't happy, ain't nobody happy.
That's right.
Wow, that's an old chest.
Isn't it, though?
We can always count on you, Phil.
I'm right there with you.
Excellent.
And then on the 23rd, Startup School MN is happening. And then all the way to October, the Cybersecurity Summit is happening. And here in Minneapolis, so that'll be a good one to go to.
Yeah.
And
guess you'll get some tips of the week for that.
Yeah, exactly.
We better. Steve will be there stocking up on security tips of the week.
Exactly, that's right. Exactly. I'm surprised you didn't stick your Bitly thing in here, Steve.
You know, I was going to, but...
change your password, people, if you're on Bitly.
Yeah. Yeah. I only want to put really profound things in there. I don't know if I'm on Bitly anymore. Well, just so you know, I ended up registering a bunch of short link domains for some customers, and I did one for Minovate, mnv8.us. And so that now works when we tweet or or when we post from Minovate, it'll go out with that short link.
Wow.
So, wow.
That's great. That is great. That is awesome.
Isn't that incredibly innovative?
That is very innovative. And it's from Minnesota.
And it is. Stop. All right. Well, I just want to thank everyone for listening to
the Minivate Gang podcast.
And we'll
have a good week.
See you next week.
Yep. We'll be there.
Alrighty. Take care.
Just keep your head down. Don't jump around. Don't try to stall. In coming out, you'll keep track of them all. Pray for a sign. Hope that it won't end up bad. The way it was before, it was the best that you had. The meaning of life, you know it's closing in fast. Give up everything if you can change the past. Shock, anxiety, this time it's for real. So kiss the ground, no getting round, no chance for a deal. Bring you further information as soon as possible.